guys, and welcome back to another episode of Revision Made Easy. And in today's episode, we'll be looking at marriage and mourning for the dead. Jewish marriage, key information. In Judaism, marriage is a two-step process. A period of engagement called the betrothal, which typically lasts for a year, is then followed by the wedding itself. A Jewish wedding can be divided into three main parts: the betrothal ceremony, the signing and reading of the marriage contract, and the marriage of the couple. For Jews, marriage creates a spiritual bond between a couple and helps them to experience holiness in their everyday lives. Betrothal. Betrothal refers to the period of time before the wedding ceremony when the couple are engaged or promised to each other. This traditionally lasts for 12 months. Betrothal has a legal status in Jewish law and can only be broken by death or divorce. During the year of betrothal, the couple do not live together, but they do prepare for their future lives together. Traditionally, a special betrothal ceremony was held a year before the wedding, but this ceremony is now held at the wedding itself. The wedding. Jewish weddings take place in the synagogue in a venue such as a hotel on any day except Shabbat or a festival. A typical Jewish wedding includes a betrothal ceremony, the signing and reading of the marriage contract, and the marriage itself. Before the wedding. Before the wedding, the couple may fast to cleanse themselves of sin and come to the ceremony with the right attitude. The betrothal ceremony. The bride joins the groom underneath the kippah, which is a canopy that symbolizes the couple's home. The bride and groom recite two blessings over wine. And in Orthodox weddings, the groom places a plain ring on the bride's finger. Reform couples, however, usually exchange rings. The marriage contract. The marriage contract is signed in the presence of witnesses, then read out and given to the bride. For Orthodox Jews, this covers aspects such as the husband's duties to his wife, the conditions of inheritance upon his death, and how he will provide for his wife if they divorce. For Reform Jews, the marriage contract usually focuses on spiritual aspirations rather than legal rights. It often describes mutual hopes for the marriage, which are the same for the husband and wife. The marriage itself. Seven wedding blessings are recited. The rabbi makes a short speech and blesses the couple in front of the congregation. The groom breaks a glass under his heel to show regret for the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem. This is a reminder that life brings hardships as well as joy. The congregation wishes the couple good luck. They'll need it. The wedding reception. After the ceremony, the couple spent a short time together in a private room to symbolize their new status as a married couple. A wedding reception follows that includes music and dancing. For Jews, marriage is a way of experiencing holiness in everyday life. It creates a spiritual bond between a couple where two souls are fused to become one. This is described in the Torah in Genesis chapter 2, which states, "Hence a man leaves his wife and mother and clings to his..." "Hence a man leaves his father and mother and clings to his wife so that they become one flesh." Genesis chapter 2, verses 24. Now I'm going to talk about certain aspects of the Jewish marriage in more detail. The ketubah. Before the ceremony takes place, the groom signs the ketubah. This is a wedding contract. In this contract, he promises to be a true husband, honour and cherish his wife, work for her, and protect and support her. Why is this important? The ketubah has been signed in a Jewish wedding since biblical times, and at the end of the ceremony is given to the wife for safekeeping. The kippah. The marriage ceremony takes place under a canopy, the kippah, pronounced hooper. Okay, so the hooper. It is symbolic of togetherness and the home that the couple will establish together. It has a roof, but no walls, to show that family and friends will always be welcome and that they are part of the wider Jewish community. The idea for a hoopah is taken from the book of Joel, chapter 2, verse 16, which states, "Gather the people, consecrate the the assembly, bring together the elders, gather the children, let the bridegroom leave his room and the bride her chamber. The goblet. The wedding begins with a reading from the Torah, followed by two blessings. The bride and groom share a goblet of wine as a symbol of joy. Why is it important? It shows they are going to share their lives together in happiness. The wine is symbolic of the Passover meal and represents the idea that Jews are now free from slavery to marry and have children. The ring. Then the couple swaps rings. The rings are a symbol of marriage and have no beginning and no end. The groom says, "Behold, you are given to me with this ring according to the law of Moses and Israel." Then the bride gives the groom a ring and says, "I am my beloved, my beloved's, and my beloved is mine." After this, the congregation all say Mazel Tov, which means good luck to the marriage couple, to the married couple. The seven blessings. The rabbi says seven blessings over the couple. Sometimes a family member can say one of the blessings, and it is seen as an honor to be asked to say a blessing. Then the bride and groom are given a cup of wine to drink. The father-in-law holds the cup whilst the groom drinks, and the mother-in-law holds the cup whilst the bride drinks. The seven blessings is supposed to represent that people need to come together to support the marriage, and that the married couple cannot achieve happiness on their own. The breaking of the glass. Finally, the groom crushes a glass on the floor with his heel. Jewish people still mourn the destruction of the Jewish temple in Jerusalem in the year 70 AD, and the breaking of the glass is supposed to remind the Jews of this. It is also done to remind the Jews that there will be bad times as well as good in their future as a married couple. More Orthodox traditions think of the breaking of glass as a sorrowful moment and are critical of more Western Reform ideas who see the breaking of the glass as a moment to start the party and as the end of the wedding ceremony. So that's the first part, which is Jewish marriage. And now we'll be moving on to the second facet of this episode, which we'll be discussing mourning for the dead and funerals. Obviously, this is a sensitive topic for you. There'll be some links in the description box to certain charities which can help this. And we're in quite a sensitive time as coronavirus is still quite prevalent. So to all those out there who have lost any loved ones, I'm so sorry, and my condolences to you. Mourning for the dead. Key information. In Judaism, there are set periods of mourning which decrease in intensity over the period of a year. These allow a family to grieve fully, but also help them to get back to normal life. Most Jews are buried rather than cremated. A short funeral service is held at the cemetery, ideally within 24 hours after the person's death. The period of mourning, when the death is announced. When Jews first hear of the death of a close family member, they make a small tear in their clothes to follow the example of Jacob as described in Genesis chapter 37, verse 34. Jews also say a blessing that refers to God as the true judge, which shows they accept God's decision to take the person's life. The first period of mourning. Most Jews are buried as soon after death as possible, usually within the first 24 hours. Until then, Jews believe the deceased soul should be comforted and supported by family members because it does not fully leave the person until they are buried. Close family are left to grieve without having to follow certain Jewish laws. The second period of mourning, Shiva. Shiva is an intense period of mourning that lasts for 7 days, starting on the day of the burial. Mourners do not work but stay at home and hold prayer services 3 times a day. One of the prayers said is the Kaddish, which praises God and asks for peace. Mourners do not wear makeup, shave, or cut their hair. Mirrors are covered so mourners can't focus on their appearance. The third period of mourning. This begins after Shiva and lasts until 30 days after the person's death. Normal life resumes, but mourners do not listen to music, go to parties, shave, or cut their hair. Male mourners hear the Kaddish daily in the synagogue. The final period of mourning. This lasts for 11 months. Mourners do not attend parties. children continue to say the Kaddish for a parent who has died. After the first year, formal mourning ends after a year. Children continue to mark the anniversary of a parent's death by lighting a candle each year that burns for 24 hours. Sons also recite the Kaddish and, if possible, make a Torah blessing. The funeral. Before the funeral, the body is carefully washed and wrapped in a plain linen cloth, as well as a talit for men. It is placed in a simple coffin to show that everyone is equal in death. Funerals do not usually take place in the synagogue, as this is considered to be a place for the living. Instead, the body is taken straight to the cemetery. The funeral service includes prayers, psalms, readings from the scripture, and a short speech by the rabbi. After the funeral, everyone washes their hands to show they are leaving death behind. Jewish law states a tombstone must be placed on the grave so the person is remembered. The Jewish word for mourning is avelut. Reform Jews might wear a torn black ribbon or a cut tie, whilst many Orthodox Jews will make a tear in their clothes upon hearing the death of a loved one, following the example of Jacob. So the five periods of avelut, which is mourning, and we have discussed in quite a lot of detail, is aninut, from death to burial; shiva, the first 7 days of mourning; the day of the burial is the first day; shloshim, the first 30 days from the day of burial, including the shiva; yad bet chodesh, the year of mourning for a parent; the 12 Hebrew months following the day of death; yar zet, the anniversary date of the death according to the Jewish calendar. Once again, disclaimer, I don't speak Hebrew and I'm not Jewish, so please excuse my pronunciations, as more often than not, they will be incorrect. This is the end of the episode. I hope that you enjoyed it and found it useful. Please share with your friends, have fun revising, and good luck with your exams.